From the high fork of the mapani tree, Santan watched the elephant herd at the waterhole with mounting delight. Once she had got over the trepidation caused by their size and monumental ugliness, she swiftly became aware of the endearing bond that seemed to unite all the members of the herd. They began to seem almost human to her. The patriarch bull was crotchety, and his arthritic joints obviously ached. They all treated him with respect and left one side of the pool for him alone. He drank noisily, squirting the water down his throat. Then he lowered himself, groaning with pleasure, into the mud and scooped it up in his trunk to slap it onto his dusty grey head. It ran down his cheeks and he closed his eyes, ecstatically. On the opposite side of the pool, the young bulls and cows drank and bathed, blowing mud and water out of their trunks like fire hoses, squirting themselves between the forelegs and down the flanks, lifting their heads and thrusting their trunks deep down their throats to send gallons of water hissing into their bellies. Satiated, they stood happily, trunks entwined in a loving embrace, and seemed to beam indulgently at the calves cavorting around their legs and under their bellies. One of the smallest calves, not much bigger than a pig and just as fat, tried to wriggle under the trunk of a dead tree that had fallen into the pool and stuck fast in the mud. In comical panic, it let out a squeal of alarm and terror. Every elephant in the herd reacted instantly, changing from contented indolence into raging behemoths of vengeance. They rushed back into the pool, beating the water and kicking it in a froth with their great hooves.
"They think a crocodile has caught the calf," Owa whispered.
"Poor crocodile," Santan whispered back.
The mother yanked the calf out from under the dead tree, hind feet first, and it shot between her front legs and fastened onto one of her teats, where it sucked with almost hysterical relief. The enraged herd quietened down, but with every evidence of disappointment that they had been denied the pleasure of tearing the hated crocodile into small pieces. When the old bull finally heaved himself upright and, glistening with mud, strode away into the forest, the cows hastily rounded up their offspring, chasing them from their muddy pleasures with swinging trunks, and, obediently, they all trooped after the patriarch. Long after they had disappeared into the forest, Santan could hear the crack of breaking branches and the rumble of their water-filled bellies as they fled away southwards. She and Owa climbed down from the mapani, grinning with pleasure.
"The little ones were so naughty," Santan told Hani, "just like human babies."
"We call them the big people,"
Hani agreed,
"for they are wise and loving as the sun."
They went down to the edge of the waterhole, and Santan marvelled at the mountainous piles of yellow dung that the elephants had dropped. Already the clucking francolin was scratching in the steaming mounds for undigested nuts and seeds.
"Anna would love that for the vegetable garden," she caught herself. "I mustn't think so much of the past."
She stooped to bathe her face, for even the muddy water offered relief from the rising heat. But suddenly Owa stiffened and cocked his head, turning it towards the north in the direction from which the elephant herd had come.
"What is it, old grandfather?"
Hani was instantly sensitive to his mood. Owa did not answer for a second, but his eyes were troubled and his lips twitched nervously.
"There is something on the wind. A sound, a scent. I am not sure," he whispered. Then with sudden decision, "There is danger. Close. We must go."
Hani jumped up instantly and snatched up the satchel of egg bottles. She would never argue with her husband's intuition. It had saved them often during their lifetime together.
"Nam, child," she said softly but urgently. "Hurry."
"Hani?"
Santan turned to her with dismay. She was already knee-deep in the muddy pool.
"It is so hot. I want to... There is danger. Great danger."
The two San whirled together like startled birds and flew back towards the forest refuge. Santan knew that in seconds she would be left alone, and loneliness was still her greatest terror. She ran from the pool, kicking spray before her, grabbed her carrying bag and stick, and dressed as she ran. Owa circled quickly through the Mapani forest, moving across the wind until it blew upon the back of his neck. The San, like the buffalo and the elephant, always fled downwind when alarmed, so that the scent of the pursuer would be carried down to them. Owa paused for Santan to catch up with him.
"What is it, Owa?" she gasped.
"Danger. Deadly danger."
The agitation of both the old people was obvious and infectious. Santan had learned not to ask questions in a situation like this.
"What must I do?"
"Cover sign the way I showed you,"
Owa ordered her, and she remembered the patient instruction that he had given her in the art of anti-tracking, of confusing and hiding the spoor so that a pursuer would find it difficult, if not impossible, to follow them. It was one of the skills on which San survival depended.
"Hani first, then you." Owa was in complete command now.
"Follow her. Do as she does. I will come at the back and cover your mistakes."
The old woman was as quick and agile as a little brown francolin. She flitted through the forest, avoiding the game paths and open ground on which their tracks would stand out clearly, picking the difficult line, ducking under thorn thickets where a pursuer would not expect them to pass, stepping on ryegrass clumps or running along the trunks of fallen trees, changing her length of stride, hopping sideways over harder ground, employing every ruse she had learned in a long, hard lifetime. San Tan followed her, not as nimble, leaving an occasional blurred footprint, knocking a green leaf from a bush as she passed, disturbing the grass slightly. Owa came close behind her, a broom of grass stalks in his hand to brush over the sign that San Tan left, stooping to pick up the tell-tale green leaf, delicately rearranging the bent grass stems that signposted the direction of their flight. He guided Hani with small, chirping bird calls and whistles, and she responded instantly, turning left or right, speeding up or freezing for a few seconds, so that Owa could listen and sniff the breeze for the scent of the pursuit, then plunging forward again at his signal. Suddenly, another open glade spread before them, half a mile wide, studded with a few tall, flat-topped giraffe acacia. Beyond it rose the low ridge, heavily forested with paper-bark trees and dense wild ebony thickets for which Owa was heading. He knew that the ridge was composed of rock-hard calcrete, lumpy and broken, and he knew also that no human being could follow him over that ground. Once they reached it, they were safe, but the glade lay before them, and if they were caught there in the open, they would be easy prey, especially if their pursuers were armed with the smoke that kills from far off. He wasted a few precious seconds to sniff at the air. It was hard to judge the distance of that faint offensive taint upon the light breeze, the stink of carbolic soap and snuff, of unwashed woolen clothing and socks, of the rancid cattle fat with which the Avambo anointed their bodies. But he knew that he had to risk the open ground. His most skilful anti-tracking could not cover all the signs that Namchild had left over the soft sandy earth. His efforts to do so would merely impede the pursuit, but he knew that the bushcraft of the Ovambo was almost equal to his own. Only on the hard calcrete ridge could he be certain of losing them. He whistled the call of a crimson-breasted shrike, and obediently Hani started out into the open glade, scuttling through the short, yellow grass.
"Run, little bird," Owa called softly. "If they catch us in the open, we are dead."